Our doctor is in, and so are the doctors of Capital Health. Welcome to the all-new Health 411. Every Sunday morning at 10, Dr. Jonathan Karp, along with our respected panel of guests from Capital Health, take you on an important medical journey to help you navigate your health and the healthcare system to reach your destination, good health. Health 411 is underwritten by Capital Health, Minds Advancing Medicine. Capital Health is the region's leader in providing progressive quality patient care with exceptional physicians, nurses, and staff, as well as advanced technology.
107.7 The Bronc and 107.7TheBronc.com, proudly nominated for a National Association of Broadcasters 2019, 2021, 22, and 23 Marconi Award for Best College Radio Station, as well as a winner of the 2023 IBS College Media Award for universities under 10,000 students. We are broadcasting from the Bronx All Digital Studios on the campus of Rider University. Welcome to Health 411. I am your host, Professor Jonathan Karp. This Health 411 program is presented by Capital Health. In Health 411, we discuss a variety of issues affecting health and wellness, public health, healthcare policy, and the science of health and healthcare. Our goal is to expand your knowledge and your perspective. Daniel Geller, our student producer, and I are today joined in the studio with Jeremy Cohn. Jeremy is the VP for Strategy and Business Development at Capital Health. And so this conversation, and we're going to give you things to think about sort of on the business side of healthcare. Welcome to Health 411, Jeremy.
Thank you. I'm very excited. I was a college DJ.
Oh, you were? That's cool. Very, very cool.
Yeah, I never thought I would be back on college radio.
Oh my God. Do you have like a DJ voice that you use?
Embarrassing you. Good afternoon and welcome to the Bronx.
There you go. Really good. That's part of what I'm going to start off and ask you about is sort of your background, because you're on the business side of our U.S. healthcare system at Capital Health, and you have experiences in college radio. How went from college to where you are now, what was your path? Did you always know you wanted to be on the business side of healthcare, or how did you find it?
Right, I definitely did not. So my undergraduate degree was in business. It was in operations management. And I got a job as a management trainee at a distribution center for a national printing company. And they started me off, I was a shift supervisor working the night shift, shipping receiving manager, kind of training. Then I ended up moving all across the country with this company. I got trained on ISO 9000, which I'm not sure if you're familiar
with.
No,
I am not familiar with that. Can you explain what that is?
So ISO 9000 is a quality management system. And when I say system, it's not a computer system. It's this international recognition that says, here are the various things that an organization of any type needs to do in order to manage their quality. So it includes things like you need to set goals, and then you need to measure how you're doing on those goals. You need to identify things that would not conform with your quality standards. You need to document procedures and train people on them, and then audit and see how well people are complying with it. So I got trained on ISO 9000, and working in the printing industry, I would go from plant to plant around the country, living anywhere from 6 months to a year at each of these places, getting them up and running as ISO 9000 certified distribution centers, mostly, though there was some print, and then move on to the next one. That company, when I was living off in California, got bought twice in 2 months or 6 months.
Wow.
I decided I was too young to be spending my life in a dying industry. I apologize to any listeners that are in the printing industry. So I moved back to Philadelphia, which is where I was from. And as I learned more about healthcare, and specifically the Joint Commission requirements, I saw a lot of parallels with ISO 9000. And so I thought to myself, well, this ISO 9000 would apply very well to hospitals. So I got some interviews with a few different health systems and tried to convince them that their health systems needed ISO 9001, and I was the person to get them there. After a couple of interviews, no one really gave me the time of day. I didn't get any offers. Someone finally said to me, you know, if you're serious with this, you need to get a master's degree. So I went to Temple University. I got an MBA in healthcare management. Temple University Health System at the time had an administrative or a management fellowship program where you work for a year rotating through a bunch of different departments. I think I was in five or six different departments for about two to 3 months. And you just learn how the hospital works. So I rotated through a few different Temple hospitals, a few different roles. Then when my year was up, one of the directors I worked with early in my fellowship had become the chief nursing officer at Temple. And she offered me the job of manager of nursing resources at Temple University Hospital. So I worked there for 6 years until I made the move over to Capitol Health. And here I was the business manager of neurosciences, then director of planning, and finally the vice president.
Wow. And so if undergraduates are listening, I think Jeremy's a great example of somebody who didn't have a career path mapped out in his head. He sort of took a business as a job, learned, was willing to learn, willing to study, and then look for new opportunities, and even went back to school later because you never know what's going to be helpful down the road. So, yeah, thank you for that. And
And you learn a lot of just
yes.
general management experience. A lot of my management experience comes from working in the warehouse, being a shift supervisor. A lot of those skills apply in different settings.
And so what I tell my students all the time, and they hate me for saying it, I'm just going to repeat it. Just because you're not in the classroom doesn't mean your learning stops. Thank you for emphasizing that. Students hate when I say that, but it's very much true. And so your title now at Capitol Health is VP of Strategy and Business Development. And a lot of people think of Capitol Health as a hospital, right? And a hospital is going to be there. People are going to get sick. People are going to need treatment. What kind of strategy and business, what does that mean in a healthcare setting?
Well, first we have a couple of hospitals
Okay.
and a lot of outpatient practices, some satellite emergency departments, other facilities like that, ambulatory surgery centers. I kind of describe my role as any harebrained scheme that someone has comes to me to look at. So you may be an organization that says, "Oh, I should partner with Capitol Health to open up this facility A or B, whatever it is." Someone needs to come and vet that plan, and so those often come to me to take a look at and evaluate.
Cool. And so that's the strategy side. The business development side is if you're in the healthcare business, do you really have to develop the business? Like I said, people are always going to get sick. You're always going to need to hire physicians, nurses, PAs, staff. What's the development side? Because development in a university setting probably means a little bit different than development in the medical center setting. So
Right,
I'll throw this,
right.
yeah.
So this isn't the fundraising
Okay.
sort of development. I don't do that. I would say, though, about people do get sick, people don't necessarily get enough of the preventative care and the screening that they need. So that is important to people. Our business development often brings with, I guess the best way to say it is I'll often look at services that people leave our area. And we're primarily in Mercer County, but we do have significant presence in Bucks and Hunterdon and Middlesex. But it's services that people may leave the area, say, go to Philadelphia or go down to New York to get. And when we see that, we say, okay, here is an unmet need in the community. People feel that they can't get, service A, B, or C here. And so then we'll do things to kind of educate maybe local physicians, private physicians in the area, as well as our marketing team could advertise straight to consumers to say, okay, here's a great service that we have right here in the Trenton and Central New Jersey and Bucks County vicinity.
Excellent. We were going to continue our conversation with Jeremy Cohn, the VP for Strategy and Business at Capital Health, but we need to take a quick break for some underwriting. We'll be right back with Health 411. You are listening to 107.7 The Bronx and 1077thebronx.com.
Health 411 Sunday mornings at 10 a.m. on 107.7 The Bronx is underwritten by Capital Health. If someone you loved was sick, how far would you go to make sure they got the best care? Your mother, your sister, your best friend, your neighbor, your son? How far would you go for doctors who will meet with you longer so they really get to know you and who collaborate across disciplines so that they can devise a plan of care that's uniquely right for you? There's no doctor too far, no care too distant that you wouldn't go there. And for more than 100 years, so has Capital Health. From our hospitals in Trenton and Hopewell to our primary care offices all across Mercer, Bucks, and Burlington counties to right here at Rider University, Capital Health has the team of doctors, nurses, experts, specialists, and staff that you can count on to care as much about your loved ones as you do. Because you'd go to the ends of the earth if someone you loved was sick. And so do we, Capital Health. There's no appointment needed for this doctor's visit. Now back to the all-new Health 411, underwritten by Capital Health, Minds Advancing Medicine.
107.7 The Bronx and 1077thebronx.com. We are recording from the Digital Bronx Studios. Welcome back to Health 411. I'm Professor Jonathan Karp, and we are continuing our conversation with Jeremy Cohn, VP for Strategy and Business Development at Capital Health. One of the things you mentioned, Jeremy, at the end of, or near the end of the last segment, was sort of you're looking out at Mercer County and the surrounds for the things that Capital Health can do. And as sort of the VP for Strategy and Business, are you part? So Capital Health sort of has a reputation for being a medical center with a lot of focus, especially like on Trenton and Mercer County. Is that part of the development and strategy that is your role, is making those connections known and developing them further?
Yes, so we'll, as through our strategic plan that we do every 3 years, we do an evaluation of our service area. And so we'll take a look at where are our patients coming from. And we can look at both the outpatient practices as well as the hospitals. And that kind of helps us identify, okay, where are the territories that we're already getting people from? Where are we not getting people from? Then we can also look at some of our competitors and say, okay, are they pulling a lot of patients from a certain community that we think those people should be coming more to us for? And then try and look at it and say, okay, what are they going there for? Is there something that we can do, something we can offer to outreach that community a little more? Mm-hmm.
And I know I saw your name on a document from the Greater Mercer Public Health Partnership. Is that part of, you're nodding a little bit. Can you tell us what that is and Capital Health's connection to it?
So right now I'm the president of Greater Mercer Public Health Partnership. It's a really unique organization. So it consists of all of the hospitals and health offices in Mercer County. So it has Capital Health, it has RWJ Hamilton, has Lawrence Rehab, as well as the Mercer County Health Department, and then each municipalities like Trenton and Lawrenceville and the East Windsor, their health officers as well. And so there's a few things that we do. One is just about communication and coordinating some efforts, but the main goal or the main work of the Greater Mercer Public Health Partnership is to conduct a community health needs assessment. So what that is every not-for-profit hospital in the U.S. every 3 years needs to conduct this community health needs assessment to determine what are the health needs of the community that they serve. And then after that, each hospital needs to develop a community health improvement plan, which says, okay, I've seen all the needs. Here are the things that we can address and the steps we're going to take to try and address those needs. So all of those Mercer County hospitals, we all have the same community health needs assessment. We do this survey of Mercer County, and the health offices, by the way, have similar requirements. So this helps them meet their requirements. We put together a community advisory board through GMPHP, and we'll review these needs assessments, and they help us determine areas to prioritize. Then once that is done and the needs assessment is done, then we take it at the hospital. We review it with our strategic planning committee of the board. They have questions. We discuss it so they understand it. The board approves it. And then we develop the community health improvement plan, which then we also take to the board. Those improvement plans are more hospital specific, though. So the needs assessment is the same for all the hospitals. The improvement plan, we do that through GMPHB, but then each hospital kind of customizes it for the specific actions they'll take.
Well, let me ask you this, you know, on a, related to the Mercer County question and the Greater Mercer Public Health Partnership. You assess the needs in the community. There are several hospitals in the community. Do hospitals compete the same way other businesses compete? Or is there a division of labor saying, we're going to let you guys specialize in these things, you guys specialize in other things, and you work together knowing that there's enough? How does that business model work in the hospital world?
Right. Well, we do still compete. Okay. We fall under Federal Trade Commission requirements. You're not allowed to divide up a market.
Okay, that's probably you're laughing, but somebody from the outside, see, I'm an academic, that's not obvious to me on the outside. So I'm laughing at myself, but you know, remember who you're talking to here. I'm not in that world. Right. So thank you for sharing that.
But there are certain services we'll look at what is the need in a community. Okay. And so let's say it's something very obscure, and maybe you only need one physician in the community. And if another hospital has a well-established, high-quality provider that's meeting the community need, it would be hard for me in planning to look at it and justify and say, okay, we need to bring another person of this specialty in, because the community need is being met. And what'll just happen is we won't have sufficient volume to be able to continue to support the physician.
So I that's interesting, because with the cohort you described for collecting all the data from the Greater Mercer Public Health Partnership, everybody's working from the same data, so everybody sees what's out there. It's sort of an efficiency of working together. And you're right; it wouldn't make sense for every hospital to identify a niche and then try to hire physicians and develop boards and stuff like that. I mean, more pointed, one of the things I see all the time is my background is Capital Health is, putting up a lot of neuroscience-y kinds of things. Neuroscience is in your background, neuroscience is mine, not that I have anything to do with your decision making. But does that mean that for everything neurology related, Capital Health decided this is a need in the community and we're willing to invest in it and we want to be like the neuroscience place here in Mercer County and the environs?
Well, we do. And we are the comprehensive stroke center. So in the state of New Jersey, they divide out hospitals. I guess you don't need to be any type, or you could be a primary stroke center or a comprehensive stroke center.
What is the difference?
So I don't remember all of the differences. They have to do with physician coverage, the availability of the physicians. There's certain equipment that you need to be able to have. You need to be able to provide certain services within a period of time. A primary stroke center needs to have a relationship, an established contractual relationship with a comprehensive stroke center, so that they could transfer the more ill patients. The comprehensive stroke center, in short, can handle much more ill patients than a primary stroke center, though a primary stroke center is certainly more than capable and more than adequate to handle a patient who's having a stroke. If you're having a stroke, you need to go to the closest emergency mm-hmm. department to take care of you.
I believe it's also with comprehensive that you have to have a neurologist in the hospital at all times. That's what makes it comprehensive. And I think primary is they have to be on call, but not necessarily at the hospital. But I might be wrong on that.
Yeah, it may be neurologist or neuro. You very well may be right.
Something on those lines.
Something to look up. Yeah, so just so you know, Jeremy, Dan is an EMT, so he's in that world a little bit, seeing stroke patients, I guess, sometimes, and just being aware of that. So One last question before we have to take a break is, what in your training and experience on your career path to Capital Health, you were involved in managing a neuroscience unit for a while. Did that inform some of the decisions that Capital Health made to move into that area, or did that predate you?
It predated me. When I came in, our neuroscience program was in a very fast growth mode. Okay. And they brought me in to kind of help set up the infrastructure to help us handle that fast growth. So I worked for the director of nursing at the time, helping with establishing how are they going to take inventory of all these supplies? What are the right supplies that they need to have? I was doing schedules for physician assistants, things that some other people were handling, but they just felt we needed to tighten up because, okay. You know, as you're part of any organization that grows, you know, once you're growing quickly, you may be kind of flying by the seat of your pants until you're really able to sit back and say, what's the right way to do this thing?
Cool. Very cool. Okay, we're going to continue our conversation with Jeremy Cohn. After some brief underwriting announcements, you're listening to 107.7 The Bronx and 1077thebronx.com.
Health 411 Sunday mornings at 10 a.m. on 107.7 The Bronx is underwritten by Capital Health. If someone you loved was sick, how far would you go to make sure they got the best care? Your mother, your sister, your best friend, your neighbor, your son? How far would you go for doctors who will meet with you longer so they really get to know you and who collaborate across disciplines so that they can devise a plan of care that's uniquely right for you? There's no doctor too far, no care too distant that you wouldn't go there. And for more than 100 years, so has Capital Health. From our hospitals in Trenton and Hopewell to our primary care offices all across Mercer, Bucks, and Burlington counties to right here at Rider University, Capital Health has the team of doctors, nurses, experts, specialists, and staff that you can count on to care as much about your loved ones as you do. Because you'd go to the ends of the earth if someone you loved was sick. And so do we, Capital Health.
There's no appointment needed for this doctor's visit. Now back to the all-new Health 411, underwritten by Capital Health, Minds Advancing Medicine.
107.7 The Bronx and 1077thebronx.com. We're recording L411 from the Digital Bronx Studios. Well, welcome back. We're continuing a conversation with the VP of Strategy and Business Development at Capital Health, Jeremy Cohn. And I want to ask another question here is, when somebody at the VP level, VP of Strategy and Business Development, what role does, you know, changes in the insurance industry play in the strategy and development in a healthcare setting on the business side? Do you have to learn like the healthcare rules, all that kind of stuff? And does that influence what the hospitals are planning to do or not?
Yeah, I would say something that surprised me when I first started as the director of planning was how much time I spent. I'm just down the hall from our medical records department. And I didn't understand there's ICD-10 diagnosis codes and procedure codes and HCPCS codes. And, you know, I even to this point, you know, sometimes mess them up and get them confused. So there's certainly a lot of learning about those codes and their billing codes. They're codes for the insurance claims that you need to file. A lot of insurance overall, the changes move kind of slowly. It's interesting, actually, that CMMI, which is the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services Innovation. I messed that up. But CMMI is Medicare's innovation wing. They are certainly, I would say they are the more innovative and creative, which is something one might not typically think of for the government role. But for CMMI, they've been more creative in some of these population management insurance plans than a lot of the private insurers are. So I have to keep track of new models that CMMI proposes. So they have a number of them out there that just talk about more efficient ways. They're basically pilot projects. They've got, you know, 30 different payment pilot projects running that an organization could select to choose. A lot of these are elective, a few of them are required. We would try it out, or a health organization would evaluate it, decide should we try it, and then try it and look at how it works.
Yeah. And one of the powerful things that I hear you talking about that I think be useful to students who are listening is you don't need an MD to work in the hospital setting. But one of the things you've had to learn is when you go, you mentioned all the diagnostic codes and things like that. Did you have to learn a little bit of medicine along the way to help your understanding of, you know, how to appropriately apply this stuff? And I don't mean in an office sort of way, but in a hospital sort of way. Did you have to learn some medicine in order to do your job?
Yeah, so I had not, before I got into healthcare management, I hadn't stepped foot in a hospital since the day I was born.
Oh, you're a lucky my man. Yeah.
So I really knew nothing about any healthcare thing now. So I have had to learn a lot, but I haven't learned enough to answer most of my family's questions. They start bringing me medical questions and I look at them and say, I have an MBA. Like, why are you asking me?
Okay. That's a very honest answer, and I do appreciate that. So related to the business planning, let's go to the numbers a little bit. When you see things like the government insurance and you see data from the government, you see data from our county, you also know what's happening in Capitol Health. Do the numbers sometimes drive like how you most effectively do your job? Is it a numbers driven kind of thing, quantitatively?
Absolutely. So I'm a very data driven person. And some of that comes from the ISO 9000 background where you're measuring and saying, okay, here's our performance. Where do we need to go? What do we need to fix? I would say the numbers are the main driver, but they're not the exclusive driver. So part of my job, when I talked about I'm evaluating these various proposals, I may look at it and say, okay, the numbers say this and the numbers say we should do this, or that I may come out and say the numbers say that we shouldn't do it. I'm providing a recommendation. I'm not typically making the final decision on whether this venture should go forward. There are other factors that come into play. So I may say, yes, it makes sense to spend $1 million to build X, Y, and Z. But when it goes to our CEO and our chief financial officer, they may look at it and say, we have a greater need for that $1 million investment. Mm-hmm. So the data shows, yes, it makes sense to move forward with this, but for other reasons, they may prioritize spending that money elsewhere. Otherwise, it may have to do with the relationships that we have with physicians or with other organizations. So, for example, there's a proposal coming up that maybe would compete strongly with an organization that we are separately looking to partner with on a different program. This is just a hypothetical. Mm-hmm. But for that reason, the CEO would step forward and say, no, we're not going to move forward with that right now, even though the data shows that it would be best.
And so I'm just going to say, for any students who might be listening, Jeremy's talking about the value of quantitative decision making. One of the things I tell students, and be honest with me, tell me if I'm wrong, can you ever take too many statistics and biostatistics courses?
No, you cannot take too many courses. However, there is a point in time when you're doing an analysis that you just need to end it.
I mean,
much data out there, yes, and so much information. At some point you decide, okay, this is the last measurement I'm going to take, and I'm going to put this proposal together.
So you don't know this, Jeremy, but one of the courses I teach here at Rider is biostatistics. And I tell students about the power that comes from making decisions based on numbers and knowing how to make probabilistic statements in your determination. Their eyes roll, but it seems like a big portion of your professional career now is collecting those things and making decisions based on quantitative reasoning.
Right. Not only that, I mean, to probably excite you a little bit more, I would say that as we move further and further with electronic medical records,
yes,
you get remote patient monitoring, there's so much more data out there, mm-hmm, And some of this data we haven't started really collecting and consolidating yet. What's the right data to get? What's the right way to use it? If you can be skilled in data analysis, that is a great asset to bring to any healthcare organization, because people like me, I was taught statistics using pen and paper. There was no software really that we used to do it. I learned calculus on pen and paper. So I appreciate and value people that come in with a much more sophisticated ability to analyze that.
So going off of the idea of quantitative analysis, right? So in your work, I think the inherent thing that drives what you do is risk and how you mitigate risk when you do a new project or you develop something new for the business. What are some of the people at Capital Health you work with to help you come to conclusions? Like, do you guys use actuaries, or is it sort of just your own experience guiding this process?
We don't use actuaries. That's a great question, because in a recent analysis that we did around some senior care services, I made sure that risk was one of the items that we were evaluating potential initiatives on. We do have an internal risk management department, so we can consult with them on what are the risk implications of it. But a lot of this stuff comes with meeting from physicians and meeting from various service line leaders, nursing directors. They know this stuff. They feed us a lot of the information, but we do have a risk department that's available for us as well.
Yeah, really cool. Unfortunately, this segment is coming to a close, but we'll be right back with Health 411 after some underwriting announcements. You're listening to 107.7 The Bronx and 1077thebronx.com.
Health 411 Sunday mornings at 10 a.m. on 107.7 The Bronx is underwritten by Capital Health. If someone you loved was sick, how far would you go to make sure they got the best care? Your mother, your sister, your best friend, your neighbor, your son? How far would you go for doctors who will meet with you longer so they really get to know you and who collaborate across disciplines so that they can devise a plan of care that's uniquely right for you? There's no doctor too far, no care too distant that you wouldn't go there. And for more than 100 years, so has Capital Health. From our hospitals in Trenton and Hopewell to our primary care offices all across Mercer, Bucks, and Burlington counties to right here at Rider University, Capital Health has the team of doctors, nurses, experts, specialists, and staff that you can count on to care as much about your loved ones as you do. Because you'd go to the ends of the earth if someone you loved was sick. And so do we, Capital Health.
There's no appointment needed for this doctor's visit. Now back to the all-new Health 411, underwritten by Capital Health, Minds Advancing Medicine.
107.7 The Bronx and 1077thebronx.com. Welcome back to Health 411. This is our last segment with Jeremy Cohen, the VP for Strategy and Business Development at Capital Health. In your discussions a little bit earlier, Jeremy, you mentioned, I'm impressed with thinking about data, but one of the things that's coming down the pike, and it's going to happen, has to do with the accumulation of data and these electronic medical records. Looking forward, part of your job is strategic thinking going forward. What kinds of things are happening at Capital Health and in the world of healthcare to allow hospitals to deal with the explosion of remote data and more number kinds of things coming in, both on the business side, and I'm not going to ask you to talk about the medical side because that's not your thing, but there's also an explosion of data on the business side coming in. What's the path forward going to look like in the healthcare setting?
I think something that we're doing, and you're seeing other organizations doing it as well, is we're starting to see the data as an asset that we need to own and control a little bit better. So we've been outsourcing with other companies to do our quality reporting. So we upload electronic medical record data or billing data to the company that does our quality analysis, and we can go in there and query their system, and it meets their needs. But as you get more and more different systems, to be able to marry data from one system to the other system, you know, you can't really do it very well unless you own the data. So right now, I end up having to export data from one system to Excel, and then from another system to Excel, and then you're kind of mapping things together. So what we need to do and what we're starting to do is finding ways to own the or to retain the data ourselves, to not outsource sort of the data evaluation, the data analysis, and to build that skill set internally. So we're early in that process on building our data analysis skill set, but it's something I see us and a lot of other health organizations move towards. A lot of the bigger organizations have moved there already. They just have some more resources, and maybe they're pulling data from, you know, from 30 different hospitals, so that there's a quicker ROI for them than a smaller health system like us.
Yeah, I guess some people would be surprised that even at, like, you know, Capital Health is a relatively large corporate entity, that people are still downloading things to Excel spreadsheets and manipulating them and stuff like that. But I guess everything just takes time to build that out and to synchronize it. And as you guys collect more data and you guys own it and control it, is there attempt at Capital Health or other hospitals to sort of become sort of on the research end to publish some of the data, the kinds of things they do, or are those looked at as sort of proprietary business secrets kinds of things?
No, they're not proprietary at all. And we do have a research department that is heavily mining some of that clinical data to help support some of the research that they're doing. So no, if we're doing a research study on a new type of procedure, we're certainly pulling that information, working with the physician, the lead investigator, and then publishing it. It's we want to move healthcare forward. We know that we're just here in, you know, central New Jersey and eastern Bucks County. If there are things we can do that are going to help patients get healthy in Oregon and Montana, I mean, we'll do everything we can to help further the art of science.
The art of medicine is also sort of the art of the medicine business, the hospital business. And related to that, we've had physicians from Capital Health come on. Some of them have been new hires in physician. Is part of that the result of the strategy and the direction that you have suggested that you've been able to implement to Capital Health?
Yeah, we'll look at geographies and say, okay, we want to place someone in this area, or we can look at certain, again, the diagnostic needs, the medical needs of our patients, and say, okay, we're referring a lot of patients out for this particular specialty. We should go ahead and hire a physician of that specialty, and we can, to go back to the data, if we hire the person and have them join the Capital Health Medical Group, now they're using the same medical record as the rest of our primary care practice providers. We're able to access that information in the hospital. And so there's a lot more seamless integration of the data. We're able to get a much more robust clinical view of the patient's care, and you're able to give them ideally a higher quality, more patient-specific care based off their individual needs.
Cool. So based on your experience as a person in the world of the healthcare industry, with the business side of it, where do you see your field in the next 10 years, 15 years, if the changes that you would want to see were in fact implemented to Capital Health?
Well, I would say that healthcare seems to continue to be a growing portion of the gross domestic product. so that is continuing. At the same time, you have these big trends in the aging of the community. So that's a national trend. The vast majority of healthcare spend for a person is in their last 6 months of life. So there's going to be a great need for care as there becomes an increasingly older population needing that care. Now, there will be other trends, and we've seen it over the years with things that were just done on the inpatient side can now be done in ambulatory surgery centers. You know, you could get various orthopedic procedures where you used to be, you know, laid up in bed for a few days, and now they're telling you, you know, they wake you up off the OR table and they say, go for a walk. So there will be those changes. Things will just continue to shift. So as we move things to outpatient, it's really to help create capacity for the demand that we're expecting from the increasingly aging population.
Cool. I have to ask you, too, as a corporate executive, the VP for Strategy and Business Development in a medical center, what's the most difficult thing about that kind of job for somebody who might be coveting it?
The stakes are high. So to go back to when I worked in the printing industry, you know, I was working in a warehouse, and when we would mess something up, you know, an order could go out wrong. We would just say to ourselves, you know, at the end of the day, oops, it's only paper.
It's only paper.
And now it is the opposite conclusion, that the stakes of a mistake are that much higher. And, you know, maybe not as much for me as for a nurse or for a physician or some of the techs where, you know, they may have an individual's life in their hand. It's important that, you know, they're doing everything they can to not make those mistakes. For me, of course, I could make expensive mistakes by saying, let's recommend that we do this thing that ends up just being a flop. So there is certainly risk there. Again, it's riskier than other industries, but it's more rewarding as well. I mean, you know, when we did a good job at the printing company, it's like, okay, great. Someone got a box full of forms on time. You know, we were happy about ourselves. Here I get to walk around and I see patients going in facilities that I help plan. It's incredibly rewarding.
You know what they say, no risk, no reward.
Yeah,
that's sort of cool. Unfortunately, we're coming to the end of our segment. Thank you, Jeremy. This has been a great conversation. You've been a great guest. This is Jeremy Combe, VP for Strategy and Business Development at Capital Health Medical Center. He's been our guest on Health 411. This is 107.7 The Bronx and 107.7thebronx.com. We're recording live from the Digital Bronx Studios. Thank you for listening. This program is part of Capital Health and Rider University's efforts to bring people together to address issues associated with all aspects of health and healthcare. We hope today's conversation with Jeremy Combe has given you things to think about the business side of healthcare and the hospital system. If you have questions or comments about this program or want to make suggestions for future broadcasts, please email us at health411@rider.edu.
Remember, you have a doctor's appointment scheduled for every Sunday at 10 a.m. Don't miss the all-new Health 411 with Dr. Jonathan Karp and our expert medical guest from Capital Health. You can listen to Health 411 anytime on demand. Go to 1077thebronx.com/health411 to listen to past episodes, or tune in every Thursday at 9 a.m. to hear the weekend rewind edition of Health 411. Health 411 on 107.7 The Bronx is underwritten by Capital Health, Minds Advancing Medicine. Capital Health is the region's leader in providing progressive quality patient care with exceptional physicians, nurses, and staff, as well as advanced technology.